And this is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Kwame Anthony Appiah speaks on his newest book, Lines of Descent, W.E.B. Du Bois and the Emergence of Identity. Well, I'm sitting here surrounded by a number of books. I dragged a whole bunch of them in W.E.B. Du Bois on the importance of Africa in world history. It's actually an extraordinary pamphlet that I got back in 1978. And then John Brown by W.E.B. Du Bois. You know, how many people even remember that, among other things, he did this extraordinary work on John Brown. And then truly one of my favorite and most instructive books of all time, really. If I were trapped on the proverbial desert island, I would definitely have to have Black Reconstruction in America, 1860 to 1880. And with that, Kwame Anthony Appiah is a British-born Ghanaian-American philosopher, a cultural theorist and novelist whose interests include political and moral theory, the philosophy of language and mind, and African intellectual history. And we're privileged to have Professor Appiah with us to discuss his latest book, Lines of Descent, W.E.B. Du Bois and the Emergence of Identity. And thank you for joining us.
It's a great pleasure.
Now, I have to say, it's hard for me to even figure out where to start, because, as I said, I've got all these books in front of me, and I have to say that for me, and I'm most interested in your theories on this, that in Black Reconstruction, I really saw a coming together, a kind of melding of a convergence and understanding of the relationship between race and class brought to us by W.E.B. Du Bois. And one of the pieces from Black Reconstruction that I particularly remember was when he was talking about the role of whites and white overseers during the periods of slavery. And just to read from a sentence or two and then your thoughts, he said, first they constituted the police patrol, who could ride with planters and now and then exercise unlimited force upon recalcitrant or runaway slaves. And then, too, there was always a chance, that they themselves might become planters by saving money, by investment, by the power of good luck. And the only heaven that attracted them was the life of the great Southern planter. So the aspiration of the overseer, of the white worker to the planter class, carried with it a systemic sense of the nature of slavery in this country, which, of course, there is a moral issue relevant to, but there was a systemic basis for. And it seemed to me that in terms of identity, that Du Bois got it right and began to bring this important convergence together for us. Your own thoughts on the whole issue of W.E.B. Du Bois and his conceptual framework and what race meant to him.
Well, I think that Black Reconstruction, which is a work of, you know, when he was, it's from 1935, I think, or so. So it's one of his later works. And it's at the point in his life when he has really, I think, taken on board a very much a class understanding that is, however, very different from the understanding of the United States that was dominant among sort of communists, because he saw that race and class were not but independent vectors, as it were. They both were important in understanding and analyzing the society that had been left behind by slavery and emancipation. And so he saw that the ways in which the white working class interests were complexly related to the interests of black workers. And, of course, his analysis of that question helps us to understand his view about what was going on in his own day, which was that racial divisions were being used essentially to pit white workers against black, and therefore to allow industrial capital and keep down white wages, basically, with the threat of black labor. So he had a sense that, because of that, that while it was in the interest of capital to keep blacks and whites divided, that meant that you couldn't speak of a simple class interest. You couldn't say that the interests of black workers and white workers were aligned as just workers' interests, because race was playing this independent role in keeping them divided. So I think that, as I say, we have to remember that this is a man who, after his education in the United States at Fisk and at Harvard, had studied in Berlin in the late 19th century, at a time when these socialist ideas were very central to academic debate. His teachers were not Marxists; they were social democrats. But like the Marxists, they saw that class was a crucial issue in trying to understand what they called the social question, which is the question of how to bring the advantages of modern life to working people.
I'm interested in if you could speak more to the development and the evolution of the thinking of Du Bois. You mentioned his study in Germany. The impact of left ideas and Marxism, it's kind of a remarkable convergence of Pan-Africanist sensitivities, of Marxist ideology, can I say Marxist ideology,
yes.
Socialist sensitivities.
Right.
There are those who on the left have criticized him for, quote-unquote, being elitist, relevant to his sensitivities, that education was a pivotal force in the development mm-hmm. of the black workers. And there are those, on the other hand, in the right, who give us that picture of that kind, that evolution of his thinkers, and a person who I think was really one of the most extraordinary intellectual figures in the history of the United States, and the dimensions of activism, et cetera, are just extraordinary.
It is. And I think it's important to say that, in a way, precisely because mainstream Marxism really, I would have said, he thought anyway, subordinated the race question to the class question, whereas he really did his whole life think that you couldn't reduce the race question to a class question, that it was a separate issue and that it had its own importance and so on. I think precisely for that reason, we can't say that Du Bois was exactly a Marxist. It's true that he did join the Communist Party, but only very, very late in life. He was over 90 when he joined the Communist Party, and he wasn't living in the United States by then. So I think, on the other hand, as I say, he was educated in an atmosphere of analysis in which Marxist thinking was very central, and he did certainly strongly appreciate the role of class and the role. He always saw the background of capitalism and its connection to racism as one of the central analytical ideas for thinking about society. And that meant that he was always sympathetic to issues about the interests of working people everywhere. I think the role of the sort of accusation of elitism is, I think that's complicated, partly because I think that many contemporary people are confused about what might be wrong with elitism. Du Bois thought, and in this he was not much different from many Marxists, he thought that there was a role to be played by an intellectual leadership in the emancipation of black people and in the move towards socialism, towards a society that was organized in the interests not of capital but of the vast majority of working people. So he did. So I think that's the sort of agenda. And when he talks, as he did, about what he called the talented tenth, the idea that one in ten black, he often said men, but I suppose he should have said people, should get the kind of high-level scholarly intellectual education that he himself had the privilege of having, and that those people, those highly educated people, people who would come out of what we now call the HBCUs, the black colleges, that they would lead society towards the emancipation of black people, that it would be a movement in which the talented tenth played a role both in as a vanguard, as the people who organized and articulated the interests of black people. And I think also, especially in his earlier life, he was very much motivated by the thought that you could combat racism, essentially, with truth. And that educated black people could say to the racists, look, what you say about black people in order, when you're trying to justify your oppression of black people, what you say is just not true. And that's where the, for example, the historical work comes in, the work on Africa and world history, is pointing out, not just to black people, but to white people, to all people, that Africa is a continent of massive historical achievement, that when the ancestors of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson were wandering around in paint and animal skins, Africans were building pyramids and developing great agricultural civilization and developing language. Developing written language, writing, and a great religion. So now I think that in his later years, Du Bois became in a way more Marxist in the sense that he thought that that it wasn't really about the truth, that the problem with racism was that it was in the interests of certain people, and that therefore telling them the truth about black people, that black people had enormous capacities, achievements, great contribution to make to world civilization, telling them that wouldn't help until you recognized the role that racism was playing in advancing the interests of certain people. And this takes us back to Black Reconstruction, because it's the interests of capitalism that are advanced by keeping black and white workers divided. And, of course, there is a real stake for the white working class, even if they're being exploited by capital, on a sort of Marxian analysis, even if they're being exploited by capital, they are gaining the rewards of the system of racial inequality. They're gaining a kind of as white people, and that there's a kind of implicit bargain there that we'll give every white person superior status to every black person, but in return, in essence, you're going to have to accept the economic inequality that keeps the white working class in its place, as it keeps black people down as well.
The multidimensional intellectual and activist character of Du Bois is really quite extraordinary. I'm going back and thinking about some of the empirical work in his work, such as The Souls of Black Folk and what he brought to us, and his plays. And then, of course, he edited the Crisis, and he was tried during the McCarthy period. And he was one of the founders of the Pan-Africanist movement. So as much as our time permits, take us through some of that incredible diversity and dimension and depth of this extraordinary theoretician, activist, W.E.B. Yes. Du Bois.
Yes, I think, you know, he was involved in some of the major political movements of his time. He was involved in the Niagara movement. He was one of the founders, therefore, in part of the NAACP. He was involved in the first Pan-African Congress, which perhaps symbolically occurred in 1900 at the beginning of the new century. It was he who coined the phrase, the problem of the 20th century is the problem of the color line, which was both an analytical claim but also a kind of call to arms to black people everywhere, and I mean in Africa and actually not just in Africa and in the New World, not just in the African diaspora, but to people of color everywhere to rise up against racial oppression. So, and in saying that the problem of the 20th century was the problem of the color line, he meant that people, one of the things he meant was that people needed to get together in the whole world to rise up against the harm done to people of color by capitalism, by colonialism, by imperialism. And he, as I say, in recognizing that challenge, he got involved in the creation of these institutions, the Pan-African Movement, which, as I say, had its first meeting in 1900, and Du Bois was there, continued, and in 1945, at the end of the... Well, I should say, he was involved at the end of the First World War in making an appeal in the name of black people at the end of the war, when the world was being, as it were, reconsidered after that war by the Europeans and the Americans, he made an appeal against colonialism to say, look, democracy has to be extended to everybody. It's not just a thing that privileged for Europeans and white people in North America. But at the end of the Second World War, in 1945, he was present in Manchester at the post-war 1945 Manchester Pan-African Congress in England, which was really where the agenda of black liberation in Africa was set. It was where people like Kwame Nkrumah, who was going to be the first president, prime minister and president of Ghana, and other black leaders from all over the continent were, if they weren't there, they were energized by the discussion there. And so he was involved in that movement, which took off and was instrumental in the liberation of Africa, in the decolonization of Africa, and in the creation of the African, what eventually became the African Union, which is the most important organization of African states. Until today, and he's part of that history, and it's in part because he was so crucial in that history that all these black leaders in Africa knew about him. And so, when at the turn of the 1960s, he left the United States, angry at the persistence of racism, and essentially very very pessimistic, I think, about the future of race relations in the United States. He went to Ghana. President Nkrumah gave him a home and support for his work on the Africana Encyclopedia. In fact, renounced his American citizenship, and so this great African American becomes a citizen of this dynamic independent African country, which was exercising leadership again, not just in Africa, but in the whole of what came to be called the Third World. And I think one of the key things to grasp about Du Bois is that because he saw racism as this great global force, he always connected the struggle against Jim Crow and racial inequality in the United States to the global struggle, first against colonialism and then with the independence of places like India, against the persistence of inequality in the world that he associated, especially in his later years, with the role of capitalism in keeping people down.
And as we complete this section, as much as I hate to, but people are just going to have to read Lines of Dissent, W.E.B. Du Bois and the Emergence of Identity, Harvard University Press. It's a brilliant, brilliant, important work, as is The Great Thinker, Activist, Theoretician, Activist, W.E.B. Du Bois. The Legacy, what do we learn today? What do we pick up and insert into the annals of Black Life Matters?
I think that for me, and that's why the theme of the book that you just very kindly praised, for me, the Du Bois is really the first intellectual, I think, to grasp, perhaps not completely clearly, but to grasp the idea that because race is not a biological thing, it's not something made by nature or God, it's something that's made through social processes, it's what we would now call socially constructed. The struggle against racism is in part a struggle against the very idea of race. It's a struggle not just against the inferiorization, the attempt to dominate and subordinate black people. It's against against theories that see black people as naturally in their place, as naturally inferior, as naturally to be dominated, as naturally below white people and to some extent yellow people in the sort of standard configuration. So I think, and that meant that he did not think that racism was inevitable. He did not think that, and he also meant that he thought that you needed alliances between black people and non-black people in order to move ahead. And I would say that there's a little bit of a tension in Du Bois's thought, because on the one hand he sees that the intellectual foundations of racism and the theory of race that was developed in the West in the aftermath of the slavery and the slave trade, that he sees that that theory is profoundly mistaken, that it's not true that black people are either a sort of biological group that's naturally inferior. He sees that that's true. And the logic of that, in the end, is to move away from racial thinking. And on the other hand, so that's one side of Du Bois, but on the other hand, he's a race man all through his life. If you ask, you know, he wakes up every morning and thinks, okay, what is this Negro going to do today? he's always thinking of himself part of the time as a black person. And so I think there's a bit of a tension. So, and I think that that tension plays itself out today. We have to, on the one hand, Black Lives Matter is about organizing people who are socially constructed as black to resist the continuing oppression of the American racial system and American racism. And on the other hand, it's sort of far future view, which is that we should get beyond race thinking. So we're organizing in racial terms in a way in order to move beyond race thinking, and that produces a kind of tension, which I think Du Bois felt and anticipated, and I think never quite resolved, and I don't know that I know how to resolve it either. But I think that's one of the lessons. It may seem like a rather abstract lesson, but I think that from the point of view of analysis, it's really crucial to see that there's this tension between wanting to see black people, as he did certainly in The Souls of Black Folk, as kind of having a special role in world history, that the history of the world is the history of races for Du Bois in his early work, sort of moving eventually beyond that to the view that, well, if we get things right in the end, this race identity, which is so important to him, that governs his life, that shapes his every waking thought, is going to be transcended, and we're going to move into a post-racial world. And I think that tension between organizing as black people to resist racism and recognizing that race is itself, in a way, one of the traps, that tension is very much present today, I think.
And we're going to have to continue this discussion. And the best way to prepare for it is to read this really important work by a brilliant scholar, activist himself, Kwame Anthony Appiah, Lines of Dissent, W.E.B. Du Bois, and the Emergence of Identity. I encourage you strongly to read through it, and thank you so much for joining us and raising these questions and continuing the information process.
Well, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.